How about yourself? What's your favourite dish of all the many dishes that you get?
Oh, this is going to surprise you. A nice traditional home-cooked, which all of me is food is home-cooked, dakka dal.
Can't beat a good dal, can you?
No, no.
Hello and welcome to CEO Stories, the podcast from the Greater Birmingham Chambers of Commerce, where I delve into the minds and journeys of the region's leading and up-and-coming CEOs. I'm Henrietta Brearley, Chief Exec of Greater Birmingham Chambers of Commerce and your host for today. And I'm delighted to be joined by Harvey Sahota, CEO of Mahir's Experience. Welcome.
Thank you, Henrietta. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, give us a little bit of an introduction. Tell us just a little bit about you and Mahir's Experience.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, Mahir's Experience, we're a multiple award-winning food manufacturer, a catering company, which we specialise in providing authentic Punjabi and South Asian cuisine. About myself, I'll try and keep it short and sweet. I'm 44, I'm married, I have three beautiful children, and I live in Walgreens, Seven Caulfield.
Fantastic. I'm sure many of our listeners will have experienced Mahir's Experience as your leading caterers of many events around the region. I know I certainly have myself, and we look forward to delving a bit into how that all came about in the podcast. But when you think back over your sort of career, your journey to date, are there any moments that really stand out to you as particularly defining in your career?
I think the one that stands out the most is probably in 2014, when a good friend of mine, which I believe you know, a certain Raj Shamji, he handed me a ticket to a Tony Robbins event called Unleash the Power Within. And believe it or not, at that time, I didn't actually know who Tony Robbins was and what the old event was about. So I happily attended the event. It was a week-long event, and it certainly seemed to do exactly what he said on the tin. He unleashed the power within. The consequences were, for me, a new sense of purpose, belief, clarity, and strategy. And I was hooked. So I think that was probably my biggest turning point.
Fantastic. We look forward to hearing how you implemented that newfound clarity and strategy in the near future. But of course, as regular listeners will know on the podcast, we like to start by going right the way back to the beginning of our guests' journeys. So tell me about the origins of Mahir's Experience.
The origins were actually deep-rooted in terms of family legacy and business. It was Mahir's Experience was founded by myself back in 2005. It's a family business, but it was established on the back of another family business, which was a small Indian delicatessen on the renowned Soho Road in Birmingham, Handsworth. Basically, the story goes, two brothers, one of which was my father, Mahir, founded the original business, which was Quality Sweet Centre. And that was a small eatery serving the local community with freshly made authentic Indian sweets and savouries. The business that they started developed a cult following, and orders flowed as the reputation for the quality of the cuisine spread across the local community. As the business flourished, I came into the business and we rebranded, and Mahir's Experience was born.
Fantastic. It's always fascinating to hear how businesses evolve from sort of those early roots with your father and uncle leading the way to where it is today. You started early in the business, didn't you? I think I've read somewhere at age 13. What was that experience like?
Oh, wow. Yeah, so it was effectively a weekend job. And you're right, I was 13 years old. But those years, those early years really formed me, I think, as a person, and got me probably the bug for business and owning my own business. And
were you a good employee? Do you think your dad would give you a good referral on those early days?
I think myself as probably a responsible and hardworking employee. Good was never me.
but of course, you didn't go straight into the business, did you? You went to study computer science at Wolverhampton University. What happened after that?
Yeah, that's right. I did computer science at the University of Wolverhampton, but there was always the weekend job, so to speak. And my parents and other family members kind of relied on people like myself in the family to come in on weekends and obviously give a helping hand. But after university, I kind of thought I was in between going on to what I wanted to do. I came into the family business. I think I just forgot to leave, to be honest. Yeah.
And did you find you were able to bring some of those skills that you picked up at university into the business?
Oh, 100%. Obviously, the business was kind of great at manufacturing and making, you know, delectable food. But when it came to kind of systems and processes, implementing IT, you know, reducing repetitive tasks and communication, all the stuff that I kind of learned at university, it was lacking in the business. So it was kind of a perfect fit. I came in and sort of developed the administration, the sales, the marketing, and all the other bells and whistles regarding those side of the operational side.
And from your perspective as a business leader today, how important do you think it is that business owners have that grip on process and operations, as well as perhaps the more creative flair side of the business?
Very important. Effective systems and processes are basically the cornerstones of implementing, you know, operating procedures. Obviously, without those, I think, you know, consistency, learning and delegation, optics, scaling, and obviously kind of the ultimate exit strategy is just impossible without having, you know, the standard operating procedures.
Obviously, that right infrastructure in place to keep the business together and help you grow.
Yeah, I mean, that's my kind of textbook answer.
Excellent. And how did the business grow from there? You know, did bringing in that sort of expertise, that structure, that way of thinking more about sort of process and operations into the business, did it have an impact?
100%. I think overall, the system supported the organic growth of the business. The business was really good at providing food, which was very much talked about and liked. And that caused a nice problem because the demand started to increase and obviously inquiries started to flow through. So without having those systems and processes in place, it would have been really much like a scattergun approach. So we needed that in place in order to basically not disappoint the already excited people who were contacting us, who wanted ultimately, you know, the wedding experience that the food that we provide brings.
Absolutely. So you've got delighted customers on the one hand, but the right infrastructure in place to keep them, satisfy them, make sure everyone gets the same quality service on the other.
That's right.
When did you become chief exec?
A funny one that is. I think probably about a month ago. No, only joking, but only really after I served in every other role and position in the business. So from being a kitchen porter, van driver, sales executive, serving tables, managing events, bookkeeping. It's almost like I served an apprenticeship in my own business. So, the title of CEO, managing director, was more or less there or thereabouts when I founded the business. But, yeah, I made sure that I fulfilled every other role so I could fully understand how the business operates at all levels.
Seeing it from quite literally every angle.
Yeah.
And how did you find the transition from working in the family business to leading the family business?
Difficult, as expected. I think family businesses have a different dynamic. There's the structure and that obviously a family business brings in terms of, you know, the elders who started the business and all the other relatives that are in the business. And sometimes can get a little bit cloudy, should we say, when it comes to reporting lines and roles and responsibilities. But, you know, all the learning that I did at university and the subsequent courses afterwards, we managed to, you know, by hook or by crook, implement those and, you know, persuade people to obviously treat it more as a corporate entity as opposed to just, you know, meddling along as a family business.
Like, so family businesses are the ultimate mix of personal and professional, aren't they? So it really is an interesting dynamic, wonderful dynamic for many, but interesting dynamic. And you're not the first guest we've had on the podcast who's from a family business background. So you're there, you're leading the business. How did you find those first steps into leadership? Where did the business get to?
The business, again, credit to the recipes, credit to the fact that, you know, people wanted our food and products. Obviously, that did make it easier in terms of the demand was there. And probably in the golden age of, you know, what I coin as the big fat Indian weddings. So even though they're happening at the moment, there was a period where it was basically, you know, so full on weekends. So the demand was there. So we actually helped kind of grow that side of things. So, but yeah, I think experiencing highs and lows, as you'd expect, fortunately, more highs than lows. But yeah, challenging at times, but I'm forever half glass full and, you know, take a challenge on and find a way.
Well, speaking of challenging times, of course, something happened in 2020 that we all know well that sent huge shockwaves through your industry in particular.
Yeah.
COVID-19 pandemic. How did you find the experience of leading your business through that?
Oh, surreal. Very, very challenging. But surprisingly, I personally kept and remained calm. We were in a good position in terms of how we run the business, in terms of the management structures, the governance we had in place, and the order book going into 2020 was basically a record business on the book. So we were in a real good position. But if I'm being quite honest with you, it almost turned the other way overnight. So we kind of, you know, went into reverse. Obviously, as a sector, we were badly hit. But, you know, with customers were panicking, competitors were falling, government help was a bit slow. And the banks were even slower, to be fair. But I think our reputation, the leadership of our team, a quick responsiveness to customers' queries, and showing that united front, and ultimately their loyalty, probably saved us. But everything that we probably earned to put into place prior to the pandemic, just the customer-centric and the way that we do things, actually, when the times are tough, it kind of repaid itself, you know, with the loyalty of the customers.
And how did you personally find it as well? Because you're not the first guest who's from a business that was significantly impacted by COVID. And it is just that challenge of going, you're leading, you're bringing people together in an environment where actually at one point we did not know what was going to be happening day to day in terms of COVID response. And how did you find it personally?
It was mentally tough. First of all, you've got the impact it's having on your own families, loved ones, and the stories that are going through your family and friend circle about people contracting the virus and the troubles that we're having. And ultimately, there were a few people, which I'm sure were all affected by, that actually passed away as a direct result of the virus. If you add then on into the mix that a lot of people who were due to get married, it's emotional purchases. It's very personal when, you know, you're getting married and when they're ringing you up and almost kind of expecting you to have an answer as to when things are going to open up and can they do this and can they do that. It's almost you have to listen and then they would share with you their tragic stories about people that, and it's almost you at some point, at sometimes thinking you're kind of counseling, you know. So but you know, there was, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. But yeah, I mean, for the team and I, you know, we probably shared amongst the client base, but you know, we found it a bit, we did find it challenging and tough hearing the stories.
So now we're through the pandemic, we're through to the other side. What impacts did it have longer term? Now you look back on Mihir's experience.
I think in a very kind of perverse way, the stop in business operations on a day-to-day basis allowed myself and some of the senior members of the team to work on parts of the business that needed attention. A lot of it was kind of the strategic side, working on the business. So, yeah, in certain ways, not having that big long break of not being, you know, doing the day-to-day ops, we managed to put new products, services, refurbished from work, and really strategize about, well, basically we were getting ready for the bounce back. And that's exactly what we did. We definitely came out of the pandemic a different beast to what we were when we went into it.
And that opportunity to refine and really develop the business.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sophie Potavar-Morel, the Future Faces Manager at Greater Birmingham Chamber of Commerce. And I'd like to tell you about another podcast from the Chamber. Future Faces, the Young Professionals Podcast. It's a platform to showcase some of our region's emerging talent and a chance for senior leaders across the region to discuss a wide range of topics that are important to this generation of future leaders. Join us as we address topics such as the importance of mentoring, creating a personal brand, defeating imposter syndrome. You can listen and subscribe to Future Faces, the Young Professional Podcast, on all major listening platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening. Now back to CEO Stories.
So we've talked about some of the most challenging moments in your career.
Yeah.
About some of your career highlights, what have been some real high points to date?
To be honest, top of the list has to be every time we receive glowing feedback from our clients. That for me is a highlight. Each time that we do a successful job and the effect it has and the recognition we get from our clientele, that's definitely one of the biggest highlights. Probably catering for the Athletes Village at the Birmingham Commonwealth Games is a massive one. And we delivered, I think, over 100,000 meals over a 10 to 14 day period. That was quite a defining period, and we actually got awarded their supplier of the games, which was unexpected. Also near the top of the list is providing our services for, wait for it, His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And renowned singer-songwriters Diljit Dosanjh, Satinder Sartaaj, Rahat Fateh Ali Khan, Atif Aslam. Now that is a hell of a five-a-side football team, if there ever was one.
And what was the Dalai Lama's favourite dish?
I believe that was the aloo chana, the chickpea and potato curry.
Now how about yourself? What's your favourite dish of all the many dishes that you get?
Oh, this is going to surprise you. A nice traditional home-cooked, which all of me is food is home-cooked, dhurka dal.
You can't beat a good dal, can you?
No.
And if you could cater a dinner party for anyone, past, present, fictional, who would it be and why?
In a bittersweet way, that would have to be the current Liverpool FC manager, Jurgen Klopp, and his leaving party. Jurgen is another aspirational leader for me, and all I'm going to say is we're going to miss him when he leaves.
Do you have any highlights of types of events you've done? You know, do you prefer the smaller events? Do you love doing something like the Commonwealth Games, or is it a little bit of everything?
I think one of the most exciting parts of the job is creating these experiences. No two jobs are ever the same. Taking a client's brief and creating something which is an overall experience. I think for us, that's the motivation each time to get out of bed and do something different. So it's like the whole team enjoy the challenge. And I think that's why a lot of the team have been working with us for so long. The variety is the spice of life, as they say.
And how big is the team now?
The team, we're at 15 members of staff in the company, but obviously working in the events industry, when we got events on, that can balloon to over 50 and beyond. So we have obviously seasonal workers, and then we obviously use a lot of agencies as well.
And what's next for Mahir's experience?
Oh, well, we've got some big plans to keep diversifying from just being an Indian catering company to also include several other projects that we've got on at the moment. So we are currently launching a new brand that specializes in cuisines from around the world. So the infrastructure and the experience we've built in providing the outdoor catering for mainly in authentic Indian cuisine, we want to now use the same infrastructure and really sweat the asset and operate across, because trends are changing. People are looking for a lot more fusion food. So, yeah, and that'll be launching very soon. So I won't say too much about the new brand, sub-brand name that we've got for that. But
but one for us all to keep an eye out for.
We'll be launching our online retail channel. That'll be food produced locally, but available across the UK. Basically into people's homes and into offices. We've also got a franchise, which we're launching. And that's under our sub-brand called Super Tiffin. And we're in talks with, we've started to become an accredited hospitality and culinary training provider. So we're working with the West Midlands Command Authority and the Department for Education, and actually having, which I think will be the first Indian cookery school in the UK. So yeah, a lot going on.
That's fantastic. I said diversifying in lots of different areas. You clearly said somebody doesn't like to sit still. And
no.
The training piece, so I know it's been a big challenge for your sector, hasn't it? Finding sort of skilled people to come in particular.
Yeah, no, I think that is, you know, that's definitely the idea, is to put something back into the community. We've got artisan chefs working for us. We've got family members who have been doing this for years, and they're happy to put back in. They want to bring on the next generation. Obviously, with the Brexit challenge and with Brexit and with the EU and the closing the borders, I think training your own, as opposed to trying to, you know, always rely on bringing people in from outside, especially in our sector, because obviously the skill set is more towards kind of authentic Indian cookery. We thought it's best to try and obviously put a training scheme in place. To be fair, organically, we've always trained people when they've joined us. So it's kind of just actually formalizing that, internationally recognized qualifications, and I'm putting something into place which is a lot more formal than the way that we're doing it at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Really formalizing it. And like you say, investing in the next generation.
Yep.
Now, on a slightly different note, Mahis are a long-standing member of the Asian Business Chamber of Commerce, of course. What role do you think networking plays in business success?
Okay, I'm going to be honest with you. At first, I wasn't much of a networker myself. And I've probably had my arm twisted to get involved. And to be fair, I'd rather kind of work as a business operator. But now, I think networking is one of the most important things you can do in business. For Mahis, it's, you know, helped us identify opportunities, help with knowledge sharing, provide access to resources, definitely help with our brand building, and marketing and promotion, and also professional development of both business operations and myself personally. So.
Fantastic. Obviously, music to my ears there, given what we do at the Chamber, where networking is pretty integral. But also, like you say, that knowledge exchange, that learning and development that comes from it. Now, charity and community is also another important part of your work. Tell me about the Mahis Foundation.
Yeah, so the Mahis Foundation is a vision that I had over 10 years ago. It's not a separate entity at the moment. It was just a kind of a phrase I coined because I had this vision of adopting a charity every year within the business and giving something back. And it's you know, it's 2014, you know, we've raised thousands of pounds by adopting a charity each year. The charities and good causes are actually voted by our very own team. And we've raised funds so many different areas of charities, such as specializing in helping with those in domestic abuse, substance abuse, autism, breast cancer, and mental health, problem gambling, homelessness, it's something that not only it's my own values, but the team's values, the family's values, is to give something back. You know, I do think the art of living is giving, and I think whatever the circumstances, I think we're still fortunate. And to put something back in to those less, it's always something that's been instilled in me from when I was young.
Absolutely. And I say that sort of giving back to communities, very much hear it through the work on your training academy as well as through the foundation. Now, as alluded to earlier, you're clearly someone who likes to keep busy. No sitting still for you, looking at lots of different ways to diversify and continue to grow the business. What do you do for fun?
We'll keep this on really short because this could go one of several ways, but I like to watch my local team at Liverpool, which I have a season ticket for. So that is something that I do kind of more or less each weekend or midweek.
You've not been tempted to switch over to West Bromwich Albion, given where you are?
To be fair, all of our local clubs are, I'm not just saying it, but we've got great relationships with them. Most of them, we work as external caterers, whether it's at Villa Park or at the Hawthorns at West Bromwich Albion. And I think, Leicester is another one, which is not too far away. At St Andrews, Birmingham, and Molineux. So, yeah, all the local clubs, we support in one way or another.
Fantastic. But your heart will always be with Liverpool.
Yeah, that's my brother's fault when I was younger.
It's all right, my husband's a Middlesbrough fan, so whenever I get into the, is it Blues, is it Villa, who's it going to be? It's a, sorry, Middlesbrough. And what's your favourite thing to do in Birmingham?
You probably won't come as a surprise, but I'm a foodie, of course. So one of my favourite things to do in Birmingham is obviously to dine at many of the fantastic independent restaurants a magnificent region has to offer. The last few places I've dined at probably include Plates by Purnell's, The Wilderness, Carters of Moseley. So yeah, just enjoying the delectable cuisine that's offered, but also seeing, getting inspired, shall we say, by the creativity of these fine independent dining
places. Fantastic. And certainly some of Birmingham's great restaurants in there. Now, we're coming to the final part of today's podcast, where we sort of do a few wider reflections. And when you look back over your career, are there any leaders and individuals who've inspired you along the way? You started the podcast by referring to one. Could be the same person, someone else who's inspired you along the way.
I'm actually going to surprise you, actually. So there's people that are in business, good friends of mine who I look up to. There's a chap called Ian Fugue. He runs a marquee business. It's got a Fuse Marquees. And we kind of were at the same level when we first sort of got to know each other. And the direction of his leadership and where he's taken his business is just phenomenal. And it's nice to see that, because obviously it's quite encouraging, because it's not Tony Robbins, but at the same time, it's really real, because it's somebody that is, it's somebody that you know personally. Another one of my heroes is a chap called Resh Dew, a serial entrepreneur who sold many businesses and now has just decided to also come into the food manufacturing game with a vertical farm and a massive piece about, sustainability. Those are kind of the two local heroes. Growing up, I've always admired Lord Karen Billamoria from Cobra Beer. I read his books and I've met him a few times at events. Others include, yes, Tony Robbins, Steve Jobs for simplicity, a bit kind of cliche, but also Elon Musk, just for creating chaos.
No one quite like it for it, is there?
No.
And you've touched on something that's come up a lot on the podcast, is that importance of having a peer network. So other chief execs who come in with you on that journey that you can learn from as well as share experiences with. Finally, if you could leave us with just one piece of advice for an inspiring chief executive, what would it be?
For us at Mihir's, it's about creating exceptional customer experience. Craig raving fans. That's the piece of advice I would, you know, offer to all businesses and CEOs and leaders. We try to create an exceptional customer experience right from the time when people contact us up until they, well, hopefully they'll never leave us, but obviously until after their event and beyond. I really think that, you know, if you look after your customers and you go above and beyond, you know, everything else will take care of itself.
That's it. It's very much that customer-centric thinking. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been fascinating to get a little bit of a glimpse behind the scenes, to learn a little bit more about your journey. And of course, for our listeners, don't forget to subscribe to CEO Stories, pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. We're basically everywhere. And do keep on top of the latest news and views from the Chamber through our website, www.greaterbirminghamchambers.com, on social media at GRBHamChambers on X, and Greater Birmingham Chambers of Commerce on LinkedIn.